Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, the topic, a look at the 2009 UBS scandal, banking fraud, corruption, and the funding of illegal activities, and why such nefarious activities among global elite matter. My guest is Bradley Birkenfeld. Bradley is an American investment banker, a whistleblower whose disclosures led to an investigation in a massive fraud by the uber-rich of the world's largest bank. With over $2 trillion in assets, the Swiss firm UBS and other banks were at the epicenter of this investigation. Bradley is accredited with being one of the most important whistleblowers in American history. The uncovering of this financial secrecy, which has included corruption and even terrorist activities, resulted in a $780 million fine and long-overdue changes in banking laws and federal tax codes and international tax treaties. The U.S. Treasury also recovered $15 billion in back taxes. However, in 2009, Bradley himself was sentenced to 30 months in a federal prison for abetting and advising wealthy clients about tax evasion and creating offshore companies. Bradley had a lucrative fast-track career in Credit Suisse, Barclays Bank, and eventually UBS, and later Union Charter's economic advisor. Today, he is a committed philanthropist in support of whistleblowers and other endeavors. He holds degrees in economics from Norwich University, and also an international MBS from the American Graduate School of Business in Switzerland. His book, Lucifer's Banker, The Untold Story of How I Destroyed Swiss Bank Secrecy, has just been officially released today by Greenleaf Books. Brad's website is luciferbanker.com. Nice to have you with us today, Brad.
Thank you very much for having me this evening.
Brad, a little later on in today's program, I'm going to ask you what you know or may not know. If you don't know anything, just say you don't know it. But I'm interested in any of the connections to this current administration, the Obama administration, previous administrations, like the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, and the person who is most likely to be the next president, and that is Hillary Clinton. Because everywhere there is money to be made, one of these individuals or their representatives or their foundations or their business associates seems to be on the other end. So I'll get to that issue a little later. But I want to begin by letting you know that many of our listeners will likely remember the UBS scandal, perhaps the largest banking scandal in history, when it hit the mainstream news. The scandal's larger picture involved massive tax evasion, concealing huge offshore accounts, money laundering, drug money, and even funding terrorism. And since we'll be diving into the specifics of UBS nefarious activities, it'd be wise to first explain what these activities were, what your specific role in discovering them and then bringing them to light, and then also what happened when you went to the internal authorities at UBS, and then without success to the United States government agencies. You went to the Securities and Exchange Commission. You went to the Department of Justice. You went to Congress. What happened? And please understand, we're here to get the information that you alone have. We need you to tell us names, if you have them, departments, if you have them. We hold a very high standard in the scholarship of our guests, giving us data and details. Please do not say once in this interview, oh, it's in my book. That is not what we want. We want detailed descriptions so we can understand what you were facing, who you were speaking with, what the outcome was. So let's start there. And by the way, there were 19,000 UBS accounts held by Americans. From what I understand, the government stopped the investigation or did not pursue the investigation on the vast majority of those people. I have to ask, why? Were there some of those people that they knew would be embarrassed or held accountable? The forum is yours.
Well, thank you very much, Gary. And there's a lot here to encompass in this largest and longest-running tax scandal in U.S. history. UBS was the largest bank in the world and still is today, managing people's assets around the world. Now, what the problem here is there's several problems. First and foremost, UBS operates not only in domestic markets, in the onshore market, but they also operate in the offshore world, which is in places like Switzerland, where they have bank secrecy and they have anonymity and secret numbered accounts. So it's important for your listeners to understand there is a difference between the onshore market and the offshore market. Now, UBS has been doing this business for quite some time under the guise of Swiss bank secrecy. Swiss bank secrecy started in 1934 when the Third Reich came to power. What happened was Adolf Hitler had mandated that anyone moves any money out of Germany would be killed. The Swiss countered that with Swiss bank secrecy by saying they would not disclose any person's identity if they opened an account in Switzerland. So you can see it's a bit of a tit-for-tat in a very, very hostile environment right before World War II. As the world became a global marketplace in the 40s after the war in the 50s, people started to do cross-border business transactions, whether it was import-export, hotels, minerals, commodities, and so forth. That was very lucrative for a country like Switzerland, which was politically stable, number one, and economically stable, number two. So you had Swiss bank secrecy that took on a whole new dimension, not only just to get away from, say, the Third Reich and some of these awful things they were doing there in Europe, but now all of a sudden it allowed people who wanted to do other nefarious acts, such as dictators, drug lords, cartel, arms smuggling, and so forth, not to mention insider trading, money laundering, wire fraud, and so forth that came later. So what you see here is an evolution of Swiss bank secrecy done for the right reasons, but later in the years abused for these other purposes. So that's something to keep in mind for your audience. Now, what's happened here is that when I worked at UBS, I was recruited there, and I worked in, as you rightly pointed out, for Credit Suisse, for Barclays, and for UBS. For about 10 years, I knew the banking system in the private banking industry in Switzerland. And what Switzerland really pushed, and what UBS in particular pushed, my employer, was for us to bring in assets. Not only bring in the assets, but also generate revenue from those assets. And that's how they became very, very profitable. Because what people have to understand is that what they charge for fees in the offshore world were much higher than they were in the onshore world. The onshore world is much more competitive. The offshore world is much more discreet and anonymous, and people prefer to do their businesses in that fashion. There are some very good reasons to do offshore business. Offshore business also helps people to say, if there's two people in the hotel industry that don't like each other and they don't want to know who's doing what in real estate transactions, they would probably use an offshore company to do that, and that's a legitimate reason to do that. Some other reasons are the taxes are lower through some of the offshore corporations that you can use. And then, of course, some people use offshore trusts as well. It's not all negative and it's not all illegal. So people have to understand that. So then what we've come to now is when I was working at UBS, I was the head of business development for North America, and I was engaged to bring in more assets and generate more revenue, as I indicated. So that was really what my role was at the bank when I started there literally 3 weeks after 9/11 had commenced here in the United States. So there are many, many different types of people that had accounts with us, from Hollywood actors to billionaires to CEOs. And you rightly point out it was the Bush administration as well as the Obama administration that is really part of this problem of not really bringing justice to the American people with respect to the UBS scandal. And the reason why I say that is very simple, is I came forward internally at UBS when I found a hidden three-page document on our intranet. that three-page document contradicted everything we were doing, and it was more of a cover your backside for the corporation rather than helping the private bankers, their clients, and even the shareholders of the bank. So you can see that this was something that when it was brought to my attention, I had never seen it, I was never trained on it, and I brought it immediately to my superiors, who pretty much told me not to make a big fuss. And that was really quite aggravating because I knew what was happening, and my Swiss colleagues really were a little bit more timid about coming forward because they lived in the country their entire lives. They had a UBS mortgage, a UBS car loan. They went to schools with the kids from UBS. So it was a bit of a quote-unquote boys' club, if you will, and you weren't going to upset that. Whereas I was the American on that desk, the only American, and I took offense to it. And I thought, I'm not going to be pushed around this way or intimidated, so I came forward and reported it.
Brad, you've got to tell us in detail what that was, since that's the original incitement to you becoming a whistleblower.
Well, that's exactly right, Gary. The three-page document, and again, I don't want to just defer to my book or my website, but they are out there, and they're easier to read than for me to maybe read it over the radio to you.
Summarize it. Just summarize it. Tell us the gist of what's in it.
Well, in essence, what it said was it was telling us, they would tell us to go to the United States, and we would go to the United States every quarter for 2 weeks at a time. And the bankers went from Lugano, which is the Italian part of Switzerland, Geneva, which is the French-speaking part of Switzerland, and Zurich, which is the German-speaking part of Switzerland. So you can see you had a different language case, not only to maybe attract some of the people that might have a language situation in the United States that wanted to deal with a particular city in Switzerland, or you just had a particular client that had opened a business account there for whatever reason. They were doing business in Europe, or they had maybe a loved one who went to school there or what have you. So there, and sometimes direct flights to these cities made sense. So in essence, what this document did, it said that we couldn't do the marketing in the United States. We couldn't bring account opening forms to the United States. We couldn't do cold calling to clients and so on and so forth. When in fact, that's exactly what they were telling us to do and paying us to do and incentivizing us to do. So this was clear that what they were doing was really covering their backside and throwing all of the bankers under the bus. And this, to me, was so crystal clear, and the documentation that I later sent to my legal and compliance departments, the heads of them, as a director of the bank, were ignored. Not for 1 month, not for 2 months, but for 3 months. So you can imagine my frustration that I see this document I was never told about, I was never trained on it, but yet when I brought it to the attention of my superiors and they did nothing about it, that's when I knew the fix was in. And that's when I decided to start collecting documents that were in my possession. I didn't take any documents. I put them in a safe storage area across the border in France in a farmhouse so that no one really knew what was going on. And if my home was ever raided in Switzerland, those documents would have been safe.
So just so I understand, I'm assuming that what you're saying is that there was some form of banking law that prevented them from actively soliciting American accounts on American soil.
That's correct. And what it comes down to is very simple. Most people in the investment world and maybe some clients certainly know about registered investment advisors and SEC registration and so forth. You have to pass licenses to sell stocks or bonds or what have you. And in Switzerland, we did not have those licenses as private bankers. So by crossing the border from Switzerland into America, it was a gray area, but it was never really clarified. But ultimately, what that meant was you were breaking the law because you had no right to solicit business when you weren't licensed to do so, especially in an offshore capacity. So, for instance, if someone from New York goes down to Florida to market their stocks and bonds, there's some sort of licenses they must have to do that, and that's registered, they're registered with the SEC and so forth. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. But when you start talking about the offshore world, that's entirely different and entirely separate. And that's where the area of running into illegality came about. Not to mention if you're aiding and abetting tax evasion and so forth. The problem with UBS is they've been doing this business for decades in America, violating our securities laws, violating our tax laws, and then so on and so forth. And there's many other laws that were broken that were never addressed, wire fraud, mail fraud, and so forth. So really what you have here is RICO. You have criminal RICO. Because UBS is operating in this capacity around the world. This is not just accidental. This is a publicly listed company that has thousands of employees and was conducting this business in every major market around the world. I knew this because I used to talk to many of my colleagues in the bank. This was a huge operation, very profitable, and it had been going on for decades. So really, when you take a step back and you think about what's going on here as someone like myself on the inside, this was a massive tax fraud perpetuated by a publicly listed company, that being UBS. UBS was just one of many banks in Switzerland that was operating in this fashion. In Switzerland, there were approximately 130 banks when I was there back in 2005 working at the bank. Now, you have to understand, for people who have been to Switzerland or even to been to Geneva, where I was working from, there's about 200,000 people in the city of Geneva. Now, 130 banks, you can only imagine it's about 1,600 people per capita per bank, and it wasn't Swiss money in those banks. It was all foreigners' money. So it's really quite an astonishing business, and it worked so well for so long. Now, when I decided to do my whistleblowing, it wasn't like I was trying to just destroy Switzerland. That wasn't my point. My point was that the bank was throwing us under the bus, and they were not reflecting the fact that they told us to do this business, but yet behind our backs they were stabbing us in the back. So this is where I started and commenced my whistleblowing internally, which was ultimately covered up by the bank, which made me even more furious. Is why I came to the United States, my own government, to continue my whistleblowing. And for your readers who think that because I got this large award from the IRS for whistleblowing, that was not planned. I started my whistleblowing before the law was even passed. I commenced the whistleblowing in early 2005, and I resigned in late 2005, and the law wasn't even passed until December 2006 in the United States. So just to clarify that, that's an important point so people understand that this wasn't just Brad Birkenfeld looking for a payout. To the contrary, Brad Birkenfeld was doing the right thing for himself, for his colleagues, for the clients, for the shareholders, and ultimately for the American people.
Okay, Brad, so, I need to take you down some specific steps here. You've laid out you laid out clearly for us, so I appreciate that, your motivation and what the problem was there. Now, the average person might say that these illegal activities don't affect them. They're the actions of wealthy multimillionaires and billionaires and have no impact upon our lives. Yet with economic collapse constantly lurking on the horizon and rapid movement of huge amounts of money across national boundaries continuing unabated, it surely does impact our well-being. Therefore, please try to make these illegal bank activities such as UBS as an example personal for us, so we can better understand their negative consequences upon the domestic economies where they struggle to make a living and survive?
Well, that's a very good question, and I can clarify that fairly well. And again, I will refer to the website again. I'm sorry, there's some interesting documents there from the IRS and so forth. And one in particular was just produced on October 21st of this year. And what it says is, $10 billion was collected and 100,000 taxpayers came under compliance, American taxpayers. So that's $10 billion, 100,000 people. That alone, that money leaves the Swiss banking industry, comes into the U.S. banking industry. That's the first plus. The second plus is the business has been terminated. The third plus is that $10 billion and counting gets invested and gets taxed through perpetuity. So forever, this money has come back to the American shores where it belonged. Now, people may say, well, I didn't really feel it or I didn't know about it. Well, that's just it. Just because you don't know about it doesn't mean it doesn't affect you. And this money coming back in, hopefully, the governments, the state governments and the federal government in the United States can actually allocate that money to good things, to build the roads, to build the schools, to take care of the environment, or whatever it might be. Those are just a few examples. But that money is now back here, rather than where it was overseas. So this is very important. The other thing that's important here is what we don't know is when you don't have transparency and accountability, which was the case with Swiss bank secrecy, you might have a lot of nefarious acts taking place. Bribery, extortion, insider trading, money laundering, drug dealing, arms dealing, human trafficking, and so forth. And then terrorist financing is probably the most serious one, I would say. So the problem here is that by me, a single guy, being courageous enough to come forward and expose the largest and longest-running tax fraud in U.S. history, my own government attacked me. And they made these false, blatant lies in court documents and in front of a federal judge stating that I was hiding one of my clients. That's right. I was sitting in DOJ headquarters in Washington, D.C., playing hide-and-seek with them. I went to the DOJ. I went to the SEC. I went to the IRS. I went to the U.S. Senate. I went to anyone who would listen to me in my government. And thank goodness I did, because what happened was the U.S. Senate was the ones who were actually the ones who gave me a subpoena. The DOJ refused to give me a subpoena. They said, we don't want to give it to you. I said, well, you're not getting the names. Because where I lived in Switzerland, if you give up the names, you go to jail. And I told them that. And they took a lot of pride in knowing that they had me over a barrel. You either break the U.S. law or you break Swiss law. But I said, I lived in Switzerland, and I was coming to them in good faith. But they were hostile towards me. The DOJ is corrupt to the core. And the tax division, it's the most useless part of this government I've ever seen. And I've seen it from the inside out, and I knew exactly what these people were doing. Those are the same people who then go into private practice and defend the people they should have prosecuted. And you want names? I'll give you names. Kevin Downing, the lead prosecutor who screwed up the KPMG case in New York City, one of many DOJ prosecutors, he's accountable. Now he's at Miller and Chevalier in Washington, D.C., as I said, defending people he should have prosecuted. Jeff Nieman, the U.S. Assistant Attorney down in Florida, he's in a law firm now doing the same thing, defending the people he should have prosecuted. The list goes on and on.
Well, don't say the list goes on and on. You haven't even gotten Eric Holder, the one who would have been ultimately responsible. And the fact this was the Obama administration. And in that Obama administration, when you were being prosecuted, Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. Now, Secretary of State has a great deal of influence and knowledge what's going on with world governments and where those despotic regimes are putting their money, where royal family members are putting their money, where terrorists put their money. This is not a secret. Every single transaction that's electronic is recorded by the National Security Agency. There's not a single transaction in the world they don't have a record of that is electronic. Now tell us the real players. You've just given us the low-hanging fruit. Go up higher on the tree.
Well, this is exactly right, and I wanted to make sure your audience understood that.
My audience is probably the most sophisticated audience in radio. Please take us higher on that tree.
Absolutely. So what we have now is, again, this massive tax fraud. And what you have is, go back in time, and it was Eric Holder. Eric Holder, the one who actually recommended to President Clinton to pardon Mark Rich. Mark Rich's attorney had a $25 million account at UBS in Zurich. So the very fact that they had actually pardoned this man and his attorney had benefited illegally by the relationship with Mark Rich is outrageous. That's just one example. Then you have Eric Holder coming in as the Attorney General. Now, the Attorney General of the United States is supposed to uphold the law. Unfortunately, Eric Holder did not. To the contrary, before Eric Holder became the Attorney General, his role was working at Covington and Burling as an attorney, where he is today. Who was his largest client? UBS. How convenient. Now, his boss, Barack Obama, was Senator Obama in the U.S. Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. He was a senator on that committee that I went to. He never showed up for one hearing, not one. But what he did do was he took millions of dollars from the same bank that was under investigation in that committee into his campaign. UBS bundled millions of dollars for Barack Obama's campaign. These are all facts. And people can check it. Now they start to connect the dots. Then you have Barack Obama appointing Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. She came in and got involved in negotiating an international criminal investigation. Why? Why was she a part of it? Okay, people might say it was diplomatic. She did not find the bank properly. She did not get all 19,000 accounts. And she got involved in something where she made a political solution to this. This was exposed by WikiLeaks once again back in 2009. And if, again, if people go onto my website, you will see under UBS scandal, a CIA cable. And the cable is very interesting because this, they never thought it was going to be disclosed. Oh, but it is disclosed, and it's on my website. And the problem with this is it is ridiculous that it says, quote, Minister Luthard made it clear that these two activities were linked in the achievement of a political settlement in the case of Swiss banking giant UBS. Two Chinese Uyghurs from Guantanamo Bay were sent to Switzerland, and they closed down a company operating in Iran, and they only got 4,700 names out of 19,000. Gary, that's a 75% failure rate. Anybody listening who fails 75% is unemployed. But Hillary Clinton did this, and she says she did it for the American people. Nonsense. She cheated 300 million Americans plus. And now people are starting to scratch their heads and saying, why was it that she was involved? Why didn't she do this properly? Because a lot of her friends had accounts at UBS.
Can you name
one? Now you see how clear the picture is.
Can you name one of her friends who had an account at UBS?
At this time, I cannot.
Okay, then it's an unfounded statement. Always stick with what you can prove.
Oh, I can prove it, but okay. I just, at this time, I have to refrain from giving the name on that regard.
Okay, so, then tell us this. Why was something involving international banking and the fines being leveled against the people who were found guilty of money laundering or not paying taxes, why was that handled by Secretary of State Clinton instead of by the Justice Department?
Well, that's exactly right, and that's my whole point. I've been arguing this for year after year, saying that why is the Secretary of State involved in an international criminal investigation, and why is it that all the players around this had a vested interest in letting UBS off the hook? Hillary Clinton and her husband got millions of dollars from UBS. They had friends there at UBS. Barack Obama was accepting millions of dollars in political campaign contributions from UBS. Eric Holder represented UBS at Covington and Burling. And Barack Obama then appointed William Wilkins. William Wilkins as the IRS general counsel. Well, William Wilkins, before he became IRS general counsel, represented Jeremiah Wright pro bono in an IRS problem he had. Well, that case got settled, coincidentally. And then William Wilkins was appointed IRS general counsel by Barack Obama. Well, William Wilkins, what he did in his legal practice, he was a lobbyist for the Swiss Bankers Association. How convenient. A lobbyist for the Swiss Bankers Association then becomes IRS general counsel who helped one of Barack Obama's friends get off an IRS problem. What is going on in this country, Gary? This is lawlessness. This is pay-for-play beyond pay-for-play. These are the highest ranks of our government. And they're all exposed. Why do you think I was the only one to go to jail? Why do you think they targeted me to try and gag me and shut me up? The opposite happened. I've written my book. I'm lecturing. I've created my website. And I'm out here talking to you on your radio station so that the people, the American people, can make a decision and say, we're fed up with this. We want to change, and we won't tolerate this anymore. We need change.
Some Americans want change. The political status quo stays. However, irrespective of whether it's Obama or Trump, it would change if it was Jill Stein. It would change if you had in positions of power Cornel West and and Glenn Ford and Chris Hedges and many other real progressives, but that at this moment that won't happen, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't work towards it. Back to the issue. Let us remember that the problem I have with the Swiss banking community, and I'm sure there's some exceptions, is that historically they have allowed Nazis to hide enormous amounts of money. No one knows how much, but it's certainly into the high billions, stolen from the Jews. Also, most of the dictators in Africa, in South America, have put their money into Swiss bank accounts, literally robbing their country blind, not necessarily taking it into the country they got asylum in, like they wouldn't put it into a French bank, but they would put it into a Swiss bank, like Papa Doc Duvalier's son, Baby Doc, took over $400 million out of Haiti, left the country's treasury virtually empty, and yet the United States was the one that provided him with the safe air transport to get him into France, and I'm sure helped make that his permanent home. So you look at all the thousands of individuals of power who have reaped rewards from exploiting their own people. That's one group, and I have a problem with that, because the Swiss banking community has some very bright people working within it. They have outstanding researchers. They have all the technology that the National Security Agency has to find out about a person's gains. How do they make this money? Is it ill-gotten? Then you have all the drug lords. You have the drug lords in the Golden Triangle in Vietnam who are parking their money because they know they couldn't put it any place from Bangkok, which is a major trade center, to Saigon, a major trade center in narcotics. The Mexican cartels, the Sinaloa cartels, all of the different seven major cartels out of Mexico and over 41 different cartels in Central and South America, they never kept their money in those countries. They put their money in Swiss bank accounts. So now you've got the drug people. Now, and that's estimated to be over $800 billion. And when they were later found guilty of that just 2 years ago, they were allowed to keep their ill-gotten gains and just paid a fine. Then you have the tax avoiders and tax evaders. And they put about $33 trillion total in money that's been taken out of the United States that if we had any brains at all and common sense, we would have one flat income tax, abolish the IRS, and like everyone who has a company, they would have without any deductions, you would pay this amount. Let's say it's 20% or even 15%. That way, General Motors wouldn't be getting a $5 billion tax write-off when they've made $5.6 billion in profits. So everybody would pay a corporate tax, and that way it would lower our debt, but we don't do that. So those people think, well, why should I pay my taxes in the United States at 35% when I can open up a subsidiary in Ireland and then have a bank in Luxembourg or a corporate headquarters in Luxembourg, so I'm not paying any taxes. I'm just parking it there. So we should have an amnesty and bring it back. But we don't do that. So we have all those bankers and those corporate interests who are completely un-American. That's the irony. They make their money elsewhere and don't pay taxes and hide it in Swiss banks. So those are just some of the people that now we're talking into the tens of thousands of individuals over decades who have parked trillions of dollars in Swiss banks, and the Swiss bankers have known about every single one of those, and yet never once did they have the integrity. Never once did they have the moral fortitude to say, we are making profits off ill-gotten gains, genocide, homicide, drug dealing, stealing, tax evasion. This is simply not right. And yet the Swiss, the people of Switzerland, have been held up as an example, a model of how the rest of the world should operate. And I'm saying, well, you better take an honest look in that mirror before you claim yourself somehow virtuous over other people. That's my concern. Before we go further, your thoughts on that?
Well, you've raised a lot of great points there, and to touch upon the dictators that have raped and pillaged and pilfered their countries, Bhutto, Marcos, Arafat, Gaddafi, the list goes on and on. You're correct. They put their monies there, and their countries suffer. And those countries suffer. Then what happens is it rises to not only poverty and famine, but also terrorism. Because if these people are disenfranchised, what else are they going to do? What do they have to live for? So there is a nexus between dictators stealing from their country and their country's fallen into disarray and obviously affecting other parts of the world, whether it's the migration, illegal migration of people into countries that are just trying to get away from a bad situation. We understand it, but why does it happen? Then wars break out, and the drug problem erupts because they have nothing else to do to make money, so they get into nefarious businesses. This is a problem that needs to be addressed. But unfortunately, the U.S. government turns a blind eye. They say they're doing something about it, but they're not. They need people like me to come in and say, look, get five Brad Birkenfelds to sit down at a table, and we'll fix it, rather than the CIA and all these intelligence agencies playing games behind people's backs. And I'll give you a very important example. I gave one client to the Department of Justice because that one person, in my opinion, through what I knew and what I read at the bank, was doing illegal oil sales with Saddam Hussein. So I walked them through this entire scenario. He lived in a $50 million condo in New York City on the 46th and 47th floor of the Olympic Tower. He was making illegal oil sales with Saddam Hussein and his regime. He had his own direct phone line into my boss's office. And I went and I showed them all the numbered accounts that he had, over $400 million, the largest account on the U.S. desk. He was an Iraqi national. But what was he doing on the U.S. desk? Because he lived in New York City. So when I brought this to their attention, they told me, we're not interested in non-Americans. I said, Dad, you don't understand. They shut me off. Kevin Downing of the DOJ shut me down. When I went on my interview with 60 Minutes with Steve Croft said, I'm shocked by all of this. And even 60 Minutes did more research on all the information I gave them on this person. Abdul Aziz Abbas, that's his name. They found his PhD dissertation in a London bookstore. They checked out his home. They said everything you told us was correct. And Steve Croft said, well, what should we do? I said, you know, Steve, you should go and talk to the 3,000 family members had their loved ones murdered on 9/11, and ask them if they care, because the DOJ told me they didn't care. Well, Steve Croft, being as spineless as he is, cut that out of the 60 Minutes interview. And instead, they brought on Thomas Perelli, the assistant attorney general, to say what a bad guy I was. Really? Every person who was adversely affected by 9/11, which makes every single American, should be outraged. This is a cover-up, and I don't like it, and I'm going to expose it, and I'm going to continue to expose it. But it gets even worse. When I had a reporter help me tell my story before I was incarcerated, he got a text message from the CIA station chief in Baghdad who threatened him, said not to report about this guy. This is what people in America need to know about. They're being cheated and stolen from by our own government. And it takes courageous whistleblowers like me to expose that. And that's what I did. Have we heard anything about it? Have we seen the DOJ arrest him? No. Why? Oh, well, go ask Loretta Lynch. She's sitting at the top of the heap. And go ask Barack Obama. What has he done?
What did you expect? You see,
I expected justice. And Brad, what I got from
Brad,
my government was cover-up and corruption.
Brad,
and they're all guilty.
Okay, Brad, do you believe it's possible to end neo-fascism with neoliberalism?
Well, that's a big question. I tend to take a step back from a situation and look at it for what it is.
Okay, what you're talking about, what you have here, Brad, is you have neo-fascists. It's an old boys club, and they've been around for a long time, and now the people running for office are neoliberals. And the neoliberal wants globalization. They want the power to be corporatized. They want individuals to be commodified. So I wouldn't be shocked and surprised by their actions. It is absolutely predictable. Now, that said, we've known for decades the close, incestuous relationship the Clinton family has had with Wall Street. This goes back to Bill's first administration, which he manned with bankers and corporate insiders. And Hillary Clinton has kept this family legacy alive. virtually all of her main insiders that are running her husband's campaign, or and then her husband's White House, then now is running her campaign, will run her White House. These are the guys from Goldman Sachs and the other large banks. Look at Larry Summers from Wall Street. Look at Timothy Geithner, Wall Street, and also, let's see, who was the second one after that? There was Robert Rubin.
Paulson.
So you've got four secretaries of Treasury in a row, all Wall Street insiders, all Clinton friends, all Clinton associates. And then we wonder why the banking community loves Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. It's that simple. So in point of fact, Hillary's one of them, and can surely you can expect her White House administration to be a continuation of her husband and Obama's. And as Secretary of State, when UBS scandal broke, Hillary Clinton sought a secret deal because, am I right or wrong, that it was a secret deal she sought with the French, the Swiss?
It was not only a secret deal, it was a secret behind-the-scenes deal that helped Barack Obama achieve what he needed. He had Robert Wolf, the chairman of UBS Americas, playing golf with the president the day after I got sentenced in Florida. And he put him on two presidential committees. This is a man who was the president, the chairman of UBS Americas, which was the onshore arm of the bank. They were doing events in this country that were supporting the offshore business. Why is it that the president is playing golf with the chairman of the bank that's under criminal investigation? And why is he accepting millions of dollars in campaign contributions? And why is it he never showed up for one hearing in the committee he was on in the U.S. Senate investigating that same bank? This is outrageous. But I guess that's just the way it works. So, you know, people can go and break the law and violate their oath to the U.S. Constitution and continue to play this game and play the American people for fools. But I'm here to correct that. I'm here to expose that. And Hillary Clinton was Obama's soldier to fix it. Oh, boy, she fixed it all right. She only got 4,700 names out of 19,000. Gary, if 10 people go rob a bank, do you only get 3 of them? 4 of them? No, you get all of them. And you want them. And you don't have to negotiate. Oh, but that's right. If we got all the names, then we would know who they are. But have we seen any big names? No, we haven't. Why? Because it's a cover-up.
Did she know who those 19,000 names were?
I don't know every person on that list.
No, I'm not. I should restate my comment. Was she given all 19,000 names to which she or her staff could review to see if she would have known any of those people personally?
I don't know for sure, but I would say this to you. Number one, why did you only get 4,700 out of the 19,000? And how did you pick those names? Were they just picked out of a hat? Did the Swiss pick them? Did Hillary pick them? Who picked them? And do we have a third-party accounting that we really know we got 4,700 names? No, we don't, because we don't trust the government, and we want an accounting. We want someone held accountable.
Now,
but we don't have that.
Brad, what I'd like for you to do is take a few moments and just be as specific as possible, because what you're about to tell us, the mainstream media has never reported. You're going to tell us some exclusive new insights that will specifically and directly challenge Hillary Clinton on engaging in a secret mission to protect bankers of UBS and others, and we want this information to get out. So please tell us again so that we know exactly what Hillary Clinton's role was in this.
This is an international criminal investigation in which Hillary Clinton was charged with going over and having secret meetings with the Swiss, as well as the Swiss came to America and had meetings with Eric Holder. Again, Eric Holder represented UBS in private practice at Covington and Burling. It's a fact. And Hillary Clinton actually took the guise of sending, why would you send two Guantanamo detainees who are Chinese Uyghurs to Switzerland? Because Barack Obama wanted Guantanamo closed, so this was his pet project. Second, they closed a small company operating in Iran. Well, as we know, Barack Obama ordered money to be sent by a private jet out of Geneva, Switzerland, to Iran. Why would we send cash in pallets to our biggest enemy who hates America? Why would we do that? Once again, that's Barack Obama's little pet project. And again, so we have the U.S. State Department acting in a capacity that is in secret and not sharing this with the American people, who should be outraged. Then you don't find the bank properly. Why didn't you find them properly for all the illegal profits they made? They made $200 million a year for the eight-year period that they studied from 2000 to 2007. Quick math would tell you that's $1.6 billion. But they only fined them $780 million. $200 went to the SEC. So really, you fined them $580 million. But where's the other $1 billion? The American people have been cheated just on that eight-year period. The bank doesn't get prosecuted. They write the check. Everyone's happy. Obama's getting millions from UBS in campaign contributions. Robert Wolf, the chairman of UBS, gets appointed by the president on two committees. Tim Geithner admits under oath that he doesn't even pay his own taxes and nothing happens. It's frightening. It's absolutely frightening.
Okay.
And this is a network of not only conspiracy but collusion and criminality.
All right. Is there any connection between UBS activities that you encountered and the recent names associated with the more recently released Panama Papers? And if so, what and who?
With respect to Panama Papers, again, that was a little bit different than what I exposed. I don't have particular names with the Panama Papers. Panama Papers was more about setting up structures, which some of them were legit and some were certainly not legit. What I exposed were actual individuals, 19,000 different accounts at UBS that were Americans. So, or on the American desk, if you will, meaning resident for tax purposes, green card holder, or a U.S. citizen. So the Panama Papers, once again, if the U.S. government had followed what I told them, is if they followed the money and we got to it early on, rather than Hillary letting them off the hook, not finding them properly, not getting all the names, doing secret side deals, we could have stopped it in other countries. I've helped other countries, Germany, France, Belgium, Greece, England. But no. America, the biggest power, militarily, economically, politically, has screwed it up royally because they've let them off the hook. Now the money's moved to Monaco, it's moved to Singapore, it's moved to Dubai, it's moved to many other places around the world. But if they had caught it when I had told them about it, we may have stopped a lot of this. Now, another name I gave to the U.S. Department of Justice was the biological brother of Osama bin Laden. He had an account at UBS, and he lived in Cambridge, Massachusetts, adjacent to the town in which one of the planes took off to crash into 9/11 towers. They told me they weren't interested. Once again, why aren't you interested? Now, I'm not saying the bin Laden family's a bad family, but don't you think you would start your investigation with the biological brother of the most notorious terrorist in U.S. history? Don't you think you'd start there? You wonder why this took place. You wonder why they're bumbling idiots in the Justice Department, because they don't know what they're doing. Or they do what they're doing, and they're covering it up. Either way, they're wrong, and they're guilty.
Brad, is it the case that with large banks such as UBS and Deutsche Bank and Goldman Sachs and Citicorp, that they're tiered by degrees of secrecy, whereby those lower down, such as yourself, are used as pawns by the upper executives? In other words, how much do bank investors, experts like yourself, really know about what's going on in the minds and strategies of the chairperson and their boards?
Well, this is another great point. And the problem is these banks are allowed to get bigger and bigger, to merge and acquire other banks. And the problem is, once they get that big, these massive banks, HSBC, a Deutsche Bank, a UBS, they begin to control so much of our whole economy, not just investment banking and private banking, but retail banking. And this affects everyone. It gets back to your original point. How does it affect the normal Joe or Jane in this country? And it does, because what happens is they collude and they get together and they control the banking sector. And the Federal Reserve should just keep their mouth shut. Don't keep having press conferences and telling us things. Just do your work, if you actually do your work, and let the economy run rather than implementing all your opinions and ideas, which affects and scares the market. But these big banks, which are controlled by the Federal Reserve, allow it to continue. But then when they break the law, they say we can't fine them or put anyone to jail. So it's this ring around the rosy between the Federal Reserve and the banking sector. The regulators don't know what's going on. Look at what happened with the Madoff scandal. SEC was clueless. It took a whistleblower and Harry Markopoulos to expose that. Think about all the New Yorkers and people across the world who were disenfranchised by what Madoff did. And it took one guy to expose it.
Brad, what happened? Brad, today there's an increasing dislike being voiced against the global elite who are blamed for so many of the ills the world faces today, particularly poverty. Since you wield and deal with so many of the world's wealthy high rollers and investors and billionaires, do you have insights you'd like to share about personalities and their worldviews that can help us better understand the bubble they live in and therefore their inability to understand or be empathetic about the consequences of their investments and wealth?
Well, a lot of the people that I manage money for and people that I had connections with, some of them actually came from very modest means and worked very hard to make money. Now, I'm not trying to condone if they were breaking the law. I'm just saying that they had a lifestyle that changed over time, maybe through luck or connections or hard work or a combination of those things. So I don't think all of them are necessarily close-minded to what's going on around them in the world. A lot of them are very philanthropic, gave money, and supported causes. The problem is it's the governments. They don't like the governments. It's not the people and the people who run a small business or a farm or what have you. It's the people at the top who got to power and abused that power to such an extent, and they're never accountable. So I think some of the very wealthy people in the world do some very good things, and some things we just don't see every day because they don't want to be out in the limelight. Now, some of them don't care, that's true, and people live a very lavish lifestyle. So it cuts both ways, and I think the problem here is that we need, as you rightly pointed out, a flat tax. We need to change the tax code. And on the U.S. corporations that are keeping money offshore, why are we allowing these loopholes to exist? Why? Of course the attorneys and the accountants for these big multinationals in the U.S. are taking advantage of this. GE, Hewlett-Packard, Starbucks, Apple, all of these companies, because the loopholes exist. Get rid of the loopholes. Do your job on Capitol Hill, and it gets done. The money leaves the foreign banks, comes back to the American banks. The American people benefit. The corporations benefit. The shareholders benefit. And we make it worth their while to do it, because the tax code's wrong. Now, coming back to the individuals, the flat tax. Now, a flat tax makes sense for several reasons. Not just one flat tax. It should be tiered, maybe two or three levels, so that you proportionally take care of people, because you can't just implement this overnight. But what would you get rid of? You would get rid of the accountants, the lawyers, and the IRS. Who makes the laws, Gary? All of those folks. They have too much power, so you'll never see it happen. Never.
Brad, final question. In the aftermath of the UBS incident and the subsequent banking changes that are little more than window dressing and won't contribute to any necessary radical change in banking nor its illegal activities, why are we not witnessing more whistleblowers coming out of the banking industry? Because the only one I know of in a major way is you. Or is this problem so systemic today and so financially lucrative for the players that there's no incentive to whistleblow?
Well, we've had a couple. Elaine Fleshman did it with J.P. Morgan, and she got attacked. And J.P. Morgan just wrote a check. Jamie Dimon just wrote a check, and he's good buddies with Obama, so that's wonderful. So you're right. Whistleblowers are attacked, assaulted, intimidated, fired. They get divorced. They're financially ruined. This is what the government does. They hate whistleblowers because the people who are breaking the law are exposed. Whistleblowers are an extension of law enforcement. That's it. Whistleblowers are an extension of law enforcement. They do the job because they're on the inside. They should be praised and paid because they're taking tremendous risks to help. Thomas Drake, he got vilified by the Department of Justice. John Kiriakou, he also got attacked and went to jail. Robert McClain, another whistleblower, attacked. Jeselyn Raddick. The list goes on. They've attacked whistleblowers time and time again. The Obama administration has attacked more whistleblowers in his administration than all other presidents combined. We need whistleblowers. Whistleblowers are good because what they're doing is they're trying to correct a wrong and make it right. Now, if there's a particular situation in which they get paid for some of their bringing the monies back, that's a good thing. And if you go back and look at the whistleblowing law, it goes back to Abraham Lincoln in 1862. It's been the most successful law in United States history. It's brought more money back to the government than any other law ever. So the problem we have is that whistleblowers are too afraid. In my case, an example, people look at me and say, well, why would I take the risk? They're going to attack me and put me in jail. But I like a good fight, and I'm still going to put up a fight, and I'm going to expose the DOJ and the politicians for all of their nonsense and their lies and corruption.
Well, Brad,
because we need to expose it. Nobody is immune from this, and I think it takes whistleblowers to come forward, and I go out of my way to help whistleblowers, and I really stress for people to do the right thing, and if they need my assistance, I would help them. Help them how to come forward, how to protect themselves, get an attorney to represent them. This is essential to correcting our society as a whole. It's a matter of public policy. We must clean up this corruption. It's been going on for far too long.
Brad, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being a person of integrity, honesty, and what we need, a person who's willing to make a sacrifice to tell the truth. So Bradley Birkenfeld, the book is Lucifer's Banker. The website is lucifersbanker.com. Appreciate you being on the Progressive Commentary Hour today with us.
Gary, thank you and your audience. God bless.
I'm Gary Knoll. You've been listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day. And don't forget, coming up in 3 minutes, Talk Back, your opportunity to raise issues, ask questions. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and here today. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with.